This is Air Commander Starscream, and you are listening to Half Measures. Half Measures? Sounds like Megatron's battle strategy.
Kia ora and welcome to episode 213 of the Half Measures podcast. I am once again joined by my friend and co-host, Mr. Porkenauer. How are you today, pal?
Kia ora, Dan. I'm really good. How are you going?
I'm not too bad. Second wedding anniversary this week to top-tier Patreon producer Samara Whiting-King. I actually think maybe I'm the one who's actually paying to be part of this. I'm not sure what way this works. But yeah, so big week in the Whiting-King household.
Congratulations. 2 years. Where does time go? It's incredible, really.
It's kind of funny, isn't it? Because it's like we've been together for about just over 12 years and then like married for two. So it's like you kind of reset the clock a little bit. So it doesn't feel like a lot, but it's a lot. But not in a bad way if you're listening. You know what I mean?
If you're listening, oh, we would certainly hope that we were having at least our patrons listening in. So second year. So what's that? So the first year's paper. What's the second year, Dan?
Well, it depends on whether you're going traditional or modern, Paul.
Okay, this is a guy who's done his homework. I've tried to catch you out here.
Yeah, exactly. So it's cloth, I think, is traditional. And I think China is modern. Or there's also gemstones now as well. So there's no shortage of options. I have followed none of that protocol, just so you know.
Yeah, just wanted to clarify. Those are the three options I have followed, none of them. And I bought a Rebel Sport voucher. That's tradition, right?
Indeed. That'd actually be not a bad gift, to be honest. But yeah, what's been happening in your week?
Oh, look, it's been after last week and all the goings on at my day job. It is still a really tough time for so many people in there, and I have nothing but the utmost respect for the people that are going through it and the professionalism that they're all showing. So it's still been a tough week work-wise, but outside of work, I've had a lot of time to get into a few shows, and so I've got a plate spinner. I've got a few things spinning at the moment, shows, and I haven't been in that position for a while where I've got a couple of things on the go, and I feel like I'm getting back to peak pool for the podcast, which gives me a feeling of centeredness when I've got a few things on the go, and that brings me happiness then.
That is very good. I've actually been thinking that my back catalogue is getting a little bit light because we've got our schedule of watches of the week that we kind of plan to watch, and sometimes I forget because I'm watching so many of them that I've actually got to get some other stuff for the pod. So I need to fill the coffers, as they say. But Paul, this is probably a good segue. What have you been watching this week?
So, movie and a show this week, Dan. Movie is our watch of the week, and I have a TV show. Now, I will preface this by saying, bearing in mind, if you check your calendar, we're now at the end of April, which even by my maths tells me we are a third of the way through the year. And I've been looking at my top 10 list, you know, the sort of contenders, and it's been pretty sort of dry, you know, for this early in. And I know we always get a rush towards the end of the year. So it is with great delight that I can confirm I now have a third entry into my top 10 TV show contenders list. And that TV series, Dan, is Belgravia, The Next Chapter. So this is set 25 years after the events of the previous show, Belgravia, and scandals continue to plague this family, the family of the Trenchards. And I did not see this series coming. And I guess what I mean by that is I come on this pod a lot every week, in fact, and for all my enjoyment of period dramas, I've actually never had any of them feature in my top 10, with the exception of season 4 of The Crown in 2020. I did go back through and look just to check, but that feels a bit different with The Crown. This show is in amongst it. This is from Julian Fellowes, so this is the creator of Downton Abbey. This happens earlier than Downton Abbey, in around 1840, 1850. And as Julian Fellowes himself sets the stage for Downton Abbey, which is set in the early 20th century. And it's also, as I said, a sequel to Belgravia, which I reviewed back in 2022. And that's sort of like, so that's set in around 1820. This is just a superb series, Dan, and I am absolutely delighted to have a show, a period drama of this nature, be this good.
Was I away the day that you reviewed this previously? It's not ringing any bells for me at all, but it does make sense, obviously, those other shows that you're talking about, Downton Abbey and the Gilded Age, but Belgravia, I'm blanking.
Well, it was, I'm just going to look it up because I was looking at it earlier myself, and as soon as I saw it, I laughed because it reminded me of the name of the episode. I always can associate with the name of our episodes of the TV show, which behind the curtain, if we haven't said it before, is what you come up with. And it was, you'll be talking on the other side of a Bacta tank, which is a great, yes. If you're a Star Wars fan, it's a great inside line on, you know, I'm going to mess you up and you're going to be on the other side of some glass. It was back in that podcast, pod 103. So a long, long time ago, Belgravia. I feel like when I talk about a period drama, whether it's Bridgerton or Gilded Age or whatever it is, they can potentially meld into one if you're not watching it because they all have a similar tone, just like when I go into my British police dramas. But hey, this is a really exciting, really dramatic season that I would say what's really pushed it a level up, if you like, is it felt as stressful as it would to watch a modern day drama. So like last week I talked about Trigger Point, you know, bombs blowing up in central London, you know, stressful tension, had that kind of stress about it. And that's not something that I think when you watch this kind of a show is something I would normally end up expecting myself to say. So this was like an ultimate period drama because so much goes wrong. There's so many situations unfolding in the exact opposite way that they would often in shows like this. And whilst I'm not saying this series finishes on a completely negative way, it does kind of have like an Empire Strikes Back type feeling where you get satisfaction but with a big dose of pain, and you can only get that pain if you're invested in the characters, and so that's also a good sign because I'm always critical of writing. So I had a great time with this one, Dan.
And so, you know how obviously the Gilded Age is kind of set after Downton Abbey, but like not a hard connection to it. Is Belgravia the same in terms of like it's set beforehand, but not a hard connection to those Downton Abbey characters?
Yeah, it's interesting because Julian Fellowes is asked this in just about every interview you'll ever find. And he always plays it close to the chest. He never says yes, he never says no, but he always, like, the closest line I could find in the brief research I did was how he said this sets the stage for Downton. So it's definitely obviously related to Belgravia because it's 25 years on and it's the same family. It feels like if I was to play you 10 pieces of music right now and said to you, which of these is the Belgravia soundtrack, you'd be able to pick it straight away because it's almost like a remix of Downton. In fact, if anything, it is too close to Downton. Like they probably should have moved away a little bit more. But no, there are no hard connections to Downton, just to Belgravia. In fact, I am being spoiler-like, but one minor spoiler, there is one character who comes through from Belgravia into Belgravia the next chapter, which is our old mate, Adam James, who played the XO on board HMS Vigil. He was the villain of the piece in the first series, and he shows up in this one as well. So there's just a lot in here in just, what are we talking, six episodes, wasn't it? Yeah, eight episodes, sorry. See, that's how quick it went. It felt like six. Just eight episodes. Great casting. If you're a fan of The Detectorists, it was a real treat to have someone from the Detectorist show up. A real, like, you have to sort of look behind the beard and go, is that him? I'll let you discover that for yourself if you're listening. Anyone who likes The Detectorist, I know at least two people who do. I won't say too much because I just don't want to give it away. But yeah, I just always enjoy the upstairs, downstairs stuff and the meeting of those two worlds, the aristocratic sort of upper class and the working class with all the northern accents. It's just got everything.
And so is Belgravia the first chapter a critical watch to this one, because with that 25-year time jump, or not so important?
No, not at all, really. I think you could get away with watching either or, because they're standalone in their own regard, and it's only that minor crossover, and you wouldn't notice that you were missing anything. There's nothing sort of heavily referenced at all. So I found this a definite step up from Belgravia, which is interesting because a lot of the ratings wouldn't reflect that. And I find that curious as well, because for me, this had a lot more going for it. There was great twists. There was clever, complicated, it's not grifters, and it's not heists, but there's something in between. There's like an Ocean's 11 canniness about a few things, betrayal, gambling going wrong, failed relationships, which of course is always the center of a period drama. And so much stuff that these people in this timeline, this time period, do, driven by reputation. So rather than doing the right thing or the human thing or even the most caring thing for your own family members, we can't possibly allow that. Our reputation is the most important thing. And it's I find it fascinating.
Where does one find a TV show like Belgravia, Paul?
This is available on Neon here in New Zealand. And yeah, a definite recommendation from me. The only criticism when I was racking my brains, what can I look back on and say they didn't do that so well? I would say the first episode didn't exactly draw me in. You know when you watch a show in the first episode, I'm a big believer that the first episode should be a real, like the first track of an album. It's got to get you hooked in, and it really didn't do that. So the point where we actually watched the first episode and we didn't come back to it for like a week or so, it's like, oh yeah, should we go back to it? And then we were in, and it was great. But so that would be my one thing. The other two cast members that I do want to name, Harriet Slater, who plays Clara, absolutely superb. And I think Benjamin Rainwright, who plays Frederick Trenchard, did a very, very good job as well. I thought that as leads, I thought they were both superb. That is me, though, this week, Dan, just that one TV show.
So where are you thinking is this? Obviously, it's too early to sort of talk about, you know, where this sits on the list, but is this a potential honourable mention, or is it potentially on the top 10?
Oh, no, it's like I said, I've only got three that I've watched this year of 2024 vintage that I've said, yeah, that's up there. That's you know how we keep our draft lists? So it could be in the top three. It could be an honourable mention, or it may get pushed out altogether, but it's in there anyway.
Wow. Exciting times. I do love updating my list each week with these new watches. And I think it's going to be different this year because we're now doing our watch of the week and include TV shows in it. I feel like there's a higher chance of us watching more modern TV shows and more chance of us maybe both having the same things on our list.
Correct. Yeah, the same picks. It'll be interesting to see because there may be things on my list that we've done as a joint review that you haven't enjoyed as much, or vice versa. So it'll be an interesting conversation to go back to and revisit, because sometimes time can play a part in what you think of a show.
It can indeed. Very good. Very good. All right. So before we jump into our watch of the week, I also have one TV show. And I feel like I might have talked about this TV show before on the pod, but looking back, I haven't reviewed it, that's for sure. And I have talked about it quite a bit in the news. This is another animated TV show on Prime Video. It's 2021's Invincible. So this is the Robert Kirkman comic. And so Robert Kirkman, obviously most famous for The Walking Dead. So this is his animated TV show, basically about superheroes. And it's pretty awesome. It's a great, 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 great cast. Steven Yeun, who we know as Glenn from The Walking Dead, he plays our main character, Mark Grayson. His father, played by J.K. Simmons, is Nolan Grayson. And so basically, Nolan, it comes from another planet. He marries a woman called Deborah Grayson, who's played by Sandra Oh, who we're also big fans of here. And they basically have a son, Mark Grayson, and he eventually gets his powers when he's about sort of, you know, 17, 18. And his dad's already kind of a defender of Earth, you know, if there's any alien attacks, is anything going on. But the whole kind of plot of this story is the kind of the, you know, what it's like to be like a young superhero, sort of taking on the burden of kind of protecting others, taking over the mantle from your dad, finding out more, like, you know, your dad isn't from here. Like he comes with this whole lot of sort of baggage and extra noise. Mark Grayson sort of joins a group of other sort of young superheroes, almost kind of in a bit of a young Justice League type way, but just honestly such a fantastic cast. One of my favorite actors actually, Walton Goggins, he plays Cecil, who kind of almost runs this group of superheroes. He works for the government. There's a lot of great plot twists. These are really like meaty episodes as well. Like each episode of this runs for about an hour, so there's no sort of shortage of storytelling. Season one is 8 episodes long. The story just like ramps up and up and up, and you kind of see on the, if you look on the IMDb reviews, like most of the episodes are kind of hovering around like a 7.7 at the lowest, but at the highest like 9.6. And it's, you know, I really feel like I'm loving animated series more and more, because like there's just, I think they really kind of hit the emotional notes. They hit all these great points, great storytelling. As I say, fantastic voice acting cast. I can't wait to jump into the second season. I know there's more stuff coming out again, like they're continuing the story. I'm having a fantastic time with this one.
It looks great. As you were talking, for some reason, I was like, is this related to DC? Is this, you know, with the Grayson name? And I was there's a lot of inspiration from what I can see, but no, definitely no links. And I guess I should have guessed that. The thing I can't get past at this point, Dan, I'm just going to have to call it out because it just made me smile and laugh straight away, is J.K. Simmons, his character of Nolan, looks like J.K. Simmons from like Spider-Man, right down to the mustache. It looks, and so as such, it just is, he's just so beautifully drawn that he looks just like I would imagine J.K. Simmons would look if he was playing this part in real life.
Isn't it J.J. Jameson in Spider-Man?
Yeah, but J.K. Simmons plays the part.
Plays the part. Oh, okay, got you.
J.K. He just looks, so he looks like that character played by J.K. Simmons.
He does. It is interesting you sort of bring up that DC linkage as well. Like, it's an interesting choice of name to go with Grayson. Like, it feels a little bit on the nose, but at the same time, like, you know, it's also, like, it's a common name, but I think just when you're in that superhero realm, it's a little bit cheeky. And I think you're right, great call with the J.K. Simmons. His voice is just so identifiable. Like, you can't, like, he's got such a command and control voice that you sort of take so seriously. And it's funny because when I think of him as an actor, like, I've seen him on the full spectrum of, you know, full comedian all the way to, you know, deadly serious badass. So yeah, no, look, this is a really good series.
He's quite terrifying as well when he's dead serious. I was just watching the trailer play as you're talking, Dan, and there's also a real retro feel to the look of the animation, sort of not quite sort of that 70s look, but there's something around that sort of the Batman the Animated Series 95 series. It's kind of a very similar vibe that I really like. And again, probably draws even more links, not just with the Grayson family name, but
I think it's good. I don't know, maybe it's just the medium sort of being animated as opposed to live action, but you know, we've all sort of talked about how kind of fatigued we are with various kind of superhero stories, and I feel like there's just something different they can do with animated that kind of, I don't know, takes me a bit out of it. It reminds me a little bit of, as you say, like X-Men or Batman type of universe stuff. So, and I think the thing that makes this different, and there's a lot of Walking Dead actors in this series overall. You've only got to look on the first page of IMDb, and we can see the King. I can't even think of the guy that lost his arm early on. Ross Marquand. It's really good.
I love it. I love that they bring those same cast members together, but really strong Stephen Young, Sandra Oh, J.K. Simmons,
Zazie Beetz.
Gillian Jacobs from Community.
Walker Goggins, Jason Manzoukas, who's from he's been in all sorts of comedies, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, etc. Fantastic.
And Zachary Quinto. I mean, it really is an exceptionally strong voice cast in terms of well-established, known actors. So great find, this one.
Yeah, and it's almost probably the one other thing. It's almost got a little bit of the Boys element where it's like what happens when you take superheroes. Right. I think the Boys is more over the top because it's kind of like the extreme of like, you know, what happens when someone with super speed busts through someone by a human. But it's more like there is actually like there's blood and there's guts and there's tears and there's all sorts of kind of additional things that happen in this universe that kind of make it more real. And I think it's actually, for a first season of a TV show, a real powerful kind of ending as well, with, you know, definitely leaves you on a bit of a cliffhanger. So looking forward to jumping into season two.
So Robert Kirkman was the comic book co-creator and the 2008 TV series. Mm. And then from then onwards, he's essentially done The Walking Dead in various iterations, and got, and then out of nowhere, after The Ones Who Live, the next thing on his credits is suddenly Invincible. And it feels like this is someone who, you know, for all we say about The Walking Dead, is essentially a very talented writer in terms of character creation and things. So this is like he needs a bit of a win after some of the later seasons.
The Walking Dead comic book series is fantastic. You know, it probably ended a little bit abruptly for a lot of people, but overall that's great. I mean, I don't know a lot about his sort of backstory, but I believe he worked in a comic book store. He kind of came from, not nothing, but, you know, he sort of like, you know, built this huge platform from kind of the ground up, which is pretty awesome. So, yeah, Paul, shall we jump into our watch of the week?
Yeah, let's go. So every week, Dan and I bring to the pod a watch of the week. We announce what that will be in advance in our Discord community, which you can join by clicking on the link that's in the show notes in whatever podcast app you're listening to this on. And we have a calendar there of what's coming up for the next few weeks, so you can watch along and catch up. This week, we are going back to the Rebel Moon universe for part two. We reviewed part one, A Child of Fire, just a few months ago, in fact, not that long ago at all. This time, though, it's part two, The Scargiver.
Dum, dum, dum. So, Korra and the surviving warriors prepare to defend Velt, their new home, alongside its people against the realm. The warriors face their past, revealing their motivations before the realm's forces arrive to crush the growing rebellion. I don't even know where to begin, Paul. I don't even know where to begin.
Then I'll begin, because I've had a conversation with two people so far who had a very similar look on the faces as the one you just gave. I really enjoyed this. I really enjoyed the first one. And it's so weird for me to be on the other side of, I don't want to say popular opinion, because that makes it general opinion. I feel like I quite often am with the masses on general opinion, but I just really enjoy this franchise. I really enjoy the characters. I have a few issues with some of the storylines here and other things, but overall, when you said last week or the week before that Zack Snyder wants to make six, I'm like, make it. If Fast and the Furious can make 23 movies, this franchise can go for six.
Here's the thing, Paul. Here we go. Let me get my Walking Dead hat on. Overall, I actually did enjoy number two more than I enjoyed number one. I kind of wished what happened is you actually just cut out a bit of number one and cut out a bit of number two and actually merge them together into a really high quality movie. The problem for me with this movie, I'm just going to have to go on a bit of a rant. We're flying around in spaceships with laser swords and robots and magic and a whole bunch of amazing technology, and all of this centers around getting some wheat from a little farming village. Like, The story here is so ridiculous. Then, on top of that, you've got so many slow motion scenes of like it's like an advertisement for Wheat Cutters R Us, and it's like just trying to. And then there's just these like, and look, I love you, Zack Snyder, but what are you thinking? Like, the story is so shoved down your throat of like, all right, let me get all my main characters, sit them around a table, virtually have them tell the same story of their past. And it's, I don't know, it just, I feel like he's built this pretty incredible and amazing world with so much hope and potential and moments of greatness that constantly trips over itself. And it could have been so great, but it's just, I don't know. Even the thought of having to watch more of these is like at the end when they're like, you know, they've virtually set it up for like, look, here's all these threads which we're going to go and pull. It's like, no. Even like the bad guy pull, like, you know, like the bad guy, like it was like, he didn't even really come back as a big superpower. Like, their whole plan was basically on the premise that we've taken out the main guy, the fleet's going to retreat, they're not going to want the wheat anymore. But it's like, oh no, they're coming for the wheat. Let's get the wheat close to the village. Like, we're going to protect it. But it just kind of meant nothing at the end of the day. I kind of hate watched it, if you know what I mean. Like, I watched it kind of like my eyes roll back into my head so often. But at the same time, I kind of enjoyed being frustrated at it. So I don't know. I guess I didn't have the worst time, but I just feel like it could have been so much more.
We haven't talked about football in a long time in your Nottingham Forest team, but what you just described there, hate watching, is very much the experience of many England football fans, I can assure you. At the start of your commentary, you talked about you know, we're on these spaceships with laser swords, and there's magic and robots, and I'm like, and there's technology. I'm like, he's just described Star Wars. And then, of course, you went straight for the wheat. And the wheat, there's two weak points. So if I had my time traveling team podcast,
weak points.
Oh, nicely done. If I had my bingo card here, we had ding and we had ding. In terms of my weaknesses coming into this as well, the wheat is weak. And then to stop the bad guys from blowing up the planet, let's put the wheat all over the roof, because they won't want to blow up the house, because then they'll be blowing up their wheat. Like, it seems to me, if they've got the technology, which appeared to look like, do you remember, because we're of a certain vintage, in the 1980s, when you'd go to like your school disco, they'd have like these leads on the floor which had like lights going off. They looked like they had this leads going into the guy. That was the green coming in was obviously good, and the red going out was the bad stuff. They've got the technology to bring this bad guy, who I loved in the first movie and I thought was poor in this movie comparatively, to bring him back to life, to power these ships, these huge weapons. But I don't know, maybe we actually need to take a step back. Maybe actually the ability to produce wheat and all the rest of it is a message for us and the planet, and let's not start me off on that. But it wasn't strong enough for the purposes of a story of this magnitude. And the second thing you're right on is the sitting around the table and all telling the stories. Like, if you're watching this movie, that's the time you make that cup of tea, because you don't, you know, you the kettle, let it boil, you'll be fine, because those stories added no value. We could have cut this movie, which is now 2 hours. We could have got this down probably to an hour 40 just on that alone. And it's not like the Fellowship of the Ring, where they're all sat around the table when we're going to hear a bit, and that had meaning and set up a scene and had real feeling. This had nothing. So yes, I'm going to give you both of those points, but I still had a real good time.
Well, I think it's that classic, like, you know, thing that people always preach on about in like film school. And, you know, if you're gonna do this type of story, it's like, it's show, don't tell. And everything in this film, you kind of got told. And so it kind of lost its emotional connection. In fact, my most visceral reaction was to everyone's shit haircuts in this film. Like, why is yes. everyone getting these terrible haircuts? Like, that was almost the most controversial thing for me. It's such a shame, because, as I say, I feel like on paper, Like, I can imagine being in, like, a Zack Snyder pitch meeting. I'll be like, yes, yes, I love this. And it's like Star Wars, but it's not Star Wars. And then we're going to have these bad guys. We're going to have a rebellion. We're going to get this group together. It's going to be like, you know, Seven Samurais or Magnificent Seven. And they're all going to rally. And they've all got these amazing backstories. And there's a love interest. And it's like, you can feel the hype. And I feel like even the cast, I feel like, we've got so many kind of like great and fantastic actors. I don't even know what the hell Anthony Hopkins is doing in here, to be honest. Like, this feels like, was there some excess budget? He is C-3PO. But it's like, I feel sorry for the cast because I feel like there is goodness in here. I can feel it. But it's just messy. But I feel like I would love to see someone do a real tight cut across one and two into one movie, and let's scrap this title, The Scargiver, because that's the worst. You know, like, it even just sounds cringe, The Scargiver.
Tarkin's Revenge was a better title after all. Who would have known? The haircuts were even mid-movie. Like, they decide, let's start cutting the hair now rather than come in with the bad haircuts. Let's actually show our audience our bad decisions in movie, in situ. That was unnecessary. The slow motions didn't bother me anywhere nearly as much as, like, a Mission Impossible 2 John Woo 700 motorcycle slow-mos. I have to admit, I didn't pick up on that. I found the dialogue. See, this is the thing. I found the characters good. I found the dialogue good, give or take the scene we talked about. The bad guy I loved in the first movie, but what they didn't do in this movie, just to sort of bring some balance to you, you know, to what you're talking about, is they didn't make me hate the bad guys like they did in the first one. And that was what they did really well in the first one. They had such evil, hateable villains, because then when the bad guys get taken down, it's even more satisfying to have that. And so by saving this terrific villain, Ed Skrein, Screen, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, sorry. I think he's fantastic in this role, but they just didn't do enough with him in this second movie to elevate his character's performance. But overall, in terms of the two movies, I still came away from this one probably with the most satisfaction. I found it for the most part really easy to watch, really entertaining, and it's like its own sort of franchise, because we talked last time about, you know, there's a bit of Star Wars, there's a bit of Doctor Who, a bit of Blade Runner, a bit of Lord of the Rings, a bit of Avatar. There's all kinds of things going on, and yet it is somehow its own thing. It treads very gently around it, and of course, Zack Snyder's strength, if anything, for me, has always been in his directing, and I really appreciate it.
You've got to give it to him that he has a vision. I just don't know whether he can land that plane, and which he's sort of proven to me in the last two movies. Even just thinking about, like, you know, at the end when the rebels come in their spaceships, like, how X-Wing did that feel when those ships kind of come, like, blazing in? And I think it's – I think the crux issue of all of this for me is I don't think the central draw card of why all these people were kind of brought together – and what they were fighting around made sense in the context of the universe. But I like what you were saying, though, because I feel like if you take a step back, it is around something far more precious that we, you know. But I don't think it's that type of movie that was trying to give that message.
No.
And it's a shame, because I feel like it could, like, if it wanted to lean into that, it could have, because I think there were some fantastic characters. Like, I think one of my favourites actually was Bay Duna, who played Nemesis, the kind of like samurai type warrior. Amazing. And it's just kind of like, but it was almost like in this movie we were just waiting to give each person their little action scene. And I felt like in the first movie, all of the, you know, as they sort of like pulled together this cast of rat bags and, you know, rebels, and now when they're sitting around the table telling the stories, everyone's crying all the time. I'm like, what's going on? Like, I thought you, and then people are like, for example, Tarek, like, I'm actually a prince. It's like, of course you are. Of course you're actually a prince. But you know what? We don't really have time to explore that story, so it doesn't really matter. And so, I don't know, there's just wasted opportunities.
One of the funniest things for me is how in Star Wars, of course, everyone talks about lightsabers because they are called lightsabers, but Luke Skywalker refers to a lightsaber as a laser sword on at least one occasion. And in this movie, there are metal, actual swords, which now have lasers. It's like they've taken, that's probably the biggest one where I was like, wow, they've really gone for the lightsaber look here. I don't know, despite what I've said, I don't know if there's six movies here, I have to be honest. I think that may be, but I've said that about Avatar as well. After the first two Avatar, I've sort of said, you know, you've shown me life in the jungle, you've shown me life in the water. Once you've done the clouds, I don't know where you're going next. It's like, I do feel like there's more story to tell. If it was just one more, that's fine. But there is obviously, as you said, lots of thread to pull on, and they're going to pull those threads down, whether you like it or not.
They're making six more movies, Paul. Put one of those six over my head with an eye on it. Strap me into one of those chairs where they put the bolt through the back of your head, the overcomplicated way to kind of end someone's life. Like, I think this is the thing I feel like. They're so intentional, these threads about, okay, oh, there's actually someone, it's a bit of a hippogriff here from like Harry Potter, and there's some magic here, and the princess actually survived, and don't worry, we've got the orchestra with bags on their heads, and like, and then we've got the prince, and then we've got these different clans. Like, you can see them going down that path.
What annoys me about what you're saying, Dan, is that actually you're making really valid points, and I can't argue back against them, because those are all things, and I don't know what it is about why I'm letting them go. I really, really enjoy Sofia Boutella as the lead. Something about her, I've always found her a really fascinating actress to watch. I loved watching her as J-Lo in Star Trek Beyond and in the Kingsman movie. And I can't, you know, take away Sophia, take away Zack Snyder, take away, I don't know what it is. I cannot. If this was a court of law or some sort of tribunal or whatever you want to call it, I don't know that I'd be able to produce the evidence that was needed to defend this. So perhaps I actually wouldn't show up. That would be the easiest way for me to not have to face that.
It's funny because I watched this with a couple of other people and we kind of had a conversation about it afterwards. And I was kind of saying it's interesting, right? Because if we didn't do the podcast, I probably would have watched this, been like, that was not that great. And I probably would have never, ever spoken about it ever again. But because we do the podcast, I feel like I watch things and it forces my hand. And I already feel like, all right, here's the 500 things I'm going to kind of bring up about this movie that have triggered me. And I feel like it's almost like a reaction and an unnecessary commentary that no one really needs to hear. But it's like, you know, like we've asked each other for the opinion. So there it is.
That's right. You asked the questions, you got the answers. It's kind of like, if the third one comes out, I'm going to add it to the list, and therefore it's going to be something we watch. It's like, but when we both don't have a good feeling about something, so I'm just going to talk about the elephant in the room, Dan, that neither you or I have talked about in months, and that is Fear the Walking Dead final season part two. We both know it's there, and yet neither of us are suggesting, should we watch that next week? Should we watch that? Neither, we're just, it's at the bottom of the backlog. If it was on a post-it note, it would now be faded from the sun. It's not, it's not being talked about. But unfortunately for you, Dan, I'm quite keen for part three. So when it comes out, get yourself ready.
Look, I would, if, you know how Zack Snyder has talked about he wants to do his like director's cut of these films?
That's too like, much.
It is too much, but like, I really would want to see a director's cut across both films turned into one or turned into like three or four episodes, like 1 hour episodes. But you've got one more shot, Zach. You're on a final warning.
The problem is you want a director's cut where actually things are cut. I think what Zack Snyder has in mind is a director's cut where 6 hours worth of additional footage is added. And suddenly we've got a Justice League 4 hour epic, which won't be epic.
Yeah. Well, is that, look, I know I'm being dramatic and very over the top on this one, and it's easy to be. But like on the positive side, like I do genuinely think like he's actually really attempted to build a pretty epic universe. He has like the actual set design, costume design is actually incredible. Like it's been filmed beautifully. And it's a shame because it's like you can see this is not a cheap movie to produce.
We haven't got time to dive into, and I don't mean it to be triggering, but I'm just going to make an observation that I enjoyed this movie for what it was more than I enjoyed, and I've only seen the first one, more than I enjoyed Dune. and everyone's raving about Dune. No one is raving about Rebel Moon. So maybe I'm the problem. It's me.
Where are my keys, Paul? Where are my keys? I think so. Before my recent Dune rewatch, I could have been in the same camp, but I feel like now that I'm so indoctrinated into that universe, I'm in love with it.
But well, it's been very offensive to you.
I'm upset, but it's like I'm glad that you enjoy it. I hope more people have enjoyed it than I have. As I say, I did find this an easier watch than the first movie, which I think is kind of interesting in itself because I think the first story is more compelling. But
Yeah.
I don't know. I kind of knew I was going to be coming in a little bit lukewarm on this one.
I had a feeling too, which is why. Did you watch me roll my sleeves up? I actually rolled them up in between the segments because I knew what was coming. I'll put them down now. It's a bit cold.
put the kettle on. So that is Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scargiver. It's quite a long title, as I've found out by getting our website and show notes ready. You can check out Part 1 and Part 2 on Netflix. And yeah, I've heard that the future parts may be movies, they may be TV series. I expect we'll maybe get a little bit more, but who knows with these ratings? Who knows?
Indeed. So that was our watch of the week. Next week, our watch of the week is Three Body Problem. So join us for that one. That's available on Netflix. Dan, I don't think I need to ask, but I will anyway. Pick of the week.
Easy choice. Invincible for me this week. How about yourself?
Yeah, no surprises, given I said it was a top 10 contender, that Belgravia, the next chapter, was a real welcome surprise for me this week. So that's my pick of the week. What have you got over at the news desk, Dan?
All right, not too much, but a couple of little things. So Fallout, the TV show, has officially been renewed for season 2. We will be reviewing Fallout here on the Half Measures podcast in the coming weeks. It is on our roadmap for those who are wondering. The Witcher has been renewed for a fifth and final season. So season 4 is currently underway. Obviously the first season without Henry Cavill, and interesting they've decided to end it with the fifth season, which kind of makes sense, I think, in a Netflix context. Getting 5 seasons out of a Netflix TV show is pretty impressive. So obviously they've got confidence in their story. We have got some news. I don't know if you've heard much about this, Paul, but The Office kind of reboot that they're working on over in the Americanas. So a name that is apparently rumoured to be cast in it, Domhnall Gleeson, who you may remember as General Hux. So nothing out yet about what his role is in this series, what that's going to look like. I'm intrigued because I feel like a reboot of The Office, not sure how that's going to translate in 2024-5 whenever it launches. And it almost feels like one of those shows, like, you can't really have too many big names on it. Like, I kind of feel like it's, you know, Steve Carell was already, he's kind of done some things, but it was still kind of like career making for a lot of those actors. So we'll see what happens. And then we have had a couple of trailers drop. So one that you shared in our Discord channel this week, Paul, Transformers 1, which teases about an early relationship with Optimus Prime and Megatron before they even had those names. This is quite a fun-looking trailer, much more fun than I possibly imagined. And I think you commented a pretty similar thing. So could be interesting for those of the Transformers fans among us.
Yeah, they're going for proper comedy, which is new. They're going with big names, like, you know, we're talking about Invincible. This has got big names associated to the characters from a voice acting perspective. And I think, other than these human faces that the robot bodies appear to have, I actually feel like everything else works for me, and I'm really quite excited about that.
No, it should be good. And then the other trailer that has just dropped is the Deadpool and Wolverine trailer. I've decided to go dark on this movie. I don't want to watch any trailers for it. I'm actually not that excited for this movie, to be honest. I think I'm sort of... I'm interested from a bringing together of the MCU, X-Men side of things, but I think these sorts of trailers drop a lot of the great jokes, so I think I'll save it for the big reveal if I can. But that is the news desk for me, Paul. Any other news on your side?
Yeah, Transformers was really the only thing I was really excited to sort of bring in this week. The other thing that was on my mind was the Alien TV show that's on its way is set, we discover now, a few years before Prometheus. So as I understand it, at the risk of making a fool of myself, that takes us to the earliest period of time in this universe that we've ever seen. So in the Star Wars term, this would be like going before the Phantom Menace. Am I right?
Makes sense to me.
Yeah. So so that's something to look forward to. But that's the only pieces that I have, Dan. Now, if you check the chat, then you will note I've just put a name in the chat. I don't know if you can see that. And if you wouldn't mind pronouncing that out loud for everyone.
Dua Lipa.
Okay. So I received feedback this week from Sonia in the Wairarapa, telling me that I completely butchered the pronunciation of her name last week.
Dua Lipa.
And made it sound, and I quote, more like I was saying Duolingo. so it's sometimes you, Dan, whether it's Krasinski or
it's
whatever. It's normally you, but this time it's me. I was actually thinking, do I bring this to the mailbag and draw attention to it? But I did want to, because Sonia also finished by saying that her number one show of 2023 was also Picard season 3, so that made it worthwhile for me. Live long and prosper, Sonia. Update, Dan, on Jane's commentary around Oliver Cromwell. So this came up from a watch of Napoleon and the whole history of the royal family attempt. And so this week we received two more additional pieces in the mailbag. Firstly, when I was saying I'd love to watch something like that, Tony said, well, Monty Python did an Oliver Cromwell skit, which I can't recall watching and I've gone looking for on YouTube. And then following on from that, Chairman Fox from the Republic of Ireland also got in touch. And he says, there's a movie out there right now based on Oliver Cromwell called, funnily enough, Cromwell. And I tell you what, Dan, I'm pretty excited about it to the point where I'm committing to watching this, because I've dug this hole for myself and I deserve to sit down in it. 1970, this movie, Richard Harris.
Right up, really?
Yep, thank you. Richard Harris, Alec Guinness, the two leads, Timothy Dalton, Patrick McGee, all about Oliver Cromwell leading the Civil War against King Charles I. So I love how this has developed from just one conversation we have about one movie and people getting involved, and suddenly there's another movie on my watch list. So that's what it's all about for me. And the only other thing before I go into last week's peak performance was Instagram have a feature where you can see who's looked at your stuff, whether they've liked it or shared it or whatever. And I was really gutted this week that we had Vicky McClure herself, Kate Fleming from Line of Duty, from the lead from Trigger Point. And we also had the official Civil War movie in our viewing our stuff, but not reposting our reviews. And it was really, really gutting to see someone look at your stuff, but make the decision not to share it. But somewhere along the line, Vicky McClure was looking at Half Measure stuff. That's probably good enough, isn't it?
Bent, I would say, Paul. That's probably the problem.
Bent coppers. That's what the problem is. Correct. So last week's peak performance was Stellan Skarsgård. A few suggestions here. We had Jake, who went with The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Anne-Marie went with Mamma Mia. Norman from Roddenberry.com. Good to have him back in the mailbag. He went with The Hunt for the Red October. absolute classic, of course.
Great show.
Samara advised that she didn't have a peak performance for Stellan Skarsgård and instead simply wished we were talking about Alexander Skarsgård. And I will leave that got it all to be had offline. Paddy gave us his 3-2-1 of Mamma Mia, Ronin, and number one peak performance was Andor. Dangerously close to three mentions of Mamma Mia, which could have triggered a rewatch clause. And I'll be honest with you, I'm not sure I have the stomach for that. But Dan, that is the mailbag this week. Shall we move into our peak performance?
We shall indeed. So much like our watch of the week, Paul and I take turns choosing different actors, actresses, directors, producers, and we choose what we think are their peak performance. And of course, you can write in and tell us who your top picks are. And if we like it, we might even watch a movie that you're recommending. But we have all these weird rules that we sometimes invoke and sometimes we choose not to. So that'll be at our discretion. Anyway, this week, Paul, you have brought to the table Cameron Diaz.
Yeah, so Cameron Diaz, who quite famously retired in 2014. So here we are 10 years later from the retirement.
That's the life. That's what I want.
That's retiring so early in a career. And yet, as I say that, I see not only words, but pictures that prove it is true because it's in post-production, a new movie, ironically called Back in Action, which is her first movie in literally 10 years. So obviously coming out of retirement, is it for a one-off? Is it for a full-time return? Who knows? But for me, my honorable mention I have gone with is Any Given Sunday. So this is a movie I've watched many, many times from 1999. Oliver Stone directed movie, got a lot of mixed reviews. For the record, it's probably my favorite American football movie. A sport I don't watch, but a movie in which I felt like it doesn't matter what the sport is, the drama off the field is what makes it happens interesting. And Cameron Diaz is a big part of that. And I love the manner in which she goes up against Al Pacino and, you know, and Charlton Heston, you know, and the old school American football establishment. She plays a real cold, bitchy businesswoman. You know, she's got a plan, she's got ambition. And I thought she really nailed the performance. So that's my honorable mention, but my peak performance is actually just a couple of years later than that, and that is her performance as Miss Everdeen in 2002's Gangs of New York. And for my money, this is her best role, and I found her again very convincing in a dramatic setting, if you like. And again, despite a lot of criticism, which I think looking back is probably largely outdated criticism from people who didn't like the idea of someone that they saw as being like a comedy or a rom-com star, you know, being in a Martin Scorsese gangster movie. I thought she's really good in this. I thought there was a lot of good tension around her character. She plays like what's the word, pickpocket or grifter, you know, and really good opposite DiCaprio. And then there's the old knife throwing scene that she did with Daniel Day-Lewis's character, which is really good too. It's a movie I haven't seen in a long, long time. Could be time to go back to it. So yeah, Any Given Sunday and Gangs of New York for me, Dan. What about you?
Those are very good shouts. I love the movie Gangs of New York, and one I easily watch every few years just out of
nice.
I just kind of get the vibe, and it's time to go back. So yeah. Just name the time. For me, I've gone for a couple of classics. So I've gone for my honourable mention, 1994's The Mask. So somebody stop me, Paul, but this is where Cameron Diaz plays Tina Carlyle. Just a great role alongside, you know, the amazing Jim Carrey to sort of, you know, already Jim Carrey's over the top in this film, but to sort of go hand in hand with him. It's one of the first movies I remember seeing her in, and I just remember it being a standout performance. Such a fun movie I haven't seen in a very, very long time. Speaking of green people, my peak performance is 2001's Shrek. So this is where Cameron Diaz plays Princess Fiona. And You know, we had Shrek mentioned a little while ago on the podcast, and I was like, it is such a quality movie, and I love that it's got such a cult following behind it. And I think, you know, someone, you know, as amazing as Cameron Diaz playing Princess Fiona is just so epic. So for me, The Mask and Shrek.
Great shots. Yeah, you're right. Eddie Murphy as Donkey. That's right. That's when it came out for Shrek. So good picks. I think the Mask, it would be an interesting one to watch now, because I feel like at the time I just thought it was sensational in terms of how good they had the effects with the man and all the rest of it. I wonder how that's aged. I wonder if it still holds up. I remember thinking that with Roger Rabbit, and thinking, I always think of The Lawnmower Man as the classic go-to for me, because I thought that was amazing. If you watch that now, it's unwatchable, but I feel like The Mask is going to hold up.
I do not think so. I think it's almost better left in the memory banks, because I think the jokes are going to be a bit raw. I think the effects are going to be a little bit rubbish. Like, it's better just to have the fond memories, I think, sometimes. And I don't know. I'm sure someone like the chairman might write in and let us know. He's probably watched this movie recently for some reason. He's got lots of time on his hands.
Interesting, not to drag it out any further, but interesting that that movie never sort of spawned a sequel, because it seemed exceptionally popular to me, at least at the time. And I know we're going back to 1994, but I just remember at the time, if you think about what gets made into a sequel these days, I feel like I'm surprised that didn't get one, but there we go.
I think you're forgetting about a movie called Son of the Mask, which came out in 2005, which is a low-tier spin-off of The Mask.
2.3 out of 10. 2.3 out of 10 from 59,000 votes. I am not going to add that to my list.
Keep it where it belongs. Yeah. Paul, that probably brings us to the end of another episode of the Half Measures podcast.
Does indeed. Thank you, as always, for watching in. If there's any more news on Oliver Cromwell, well, not news, but I'm pretty sure he's still dead. But if there's anything else that we've talked about this week that you think we should be checking out or talking about, please do get in touch at halfmeasurespodcast.com.
Also, a very special shout out to our Patreon producers, Samara Whiting King, Diana Kanawa, Trisha Brady, Tony Baby Horsefall, and Michael Chalmers. If you too would like to become a Patreon producer of the Half Measures podcast, then you can find those details in the show notes below. But until next week, everyone, adios.